Desegregate Connecticut. It's some group or website or but there's a broadening coalition of affordable housing advocates. They gathered outside the state capitol just a couple of days ago to insist that the time has come to tackle housing segregation in Connecticut. But that time's not going to be this month. After meeting with the legislative leaders, Governor Ned Lamont said Tuesday that he intends to call the legislature into special session to focus on police accountability, the wider use of absentee ballots in November as a temporary COVID-19 safety measure, the cost controls on insulin, and a continuation of telemedicine. The governor's public comments confirm what the legislative leaders have been saying privately for weeks. The July special session would have a substantive, though now narrow, agenda. The issue of housing segregation, however, was not raised by legislative leaders, though a second special session, tentatively scheduled for sometime in September, is currently under discussion. Lamont said he intends to issue his formal call for a special session today, the same day the legislature is expected to hold a virtual public hearing on police accountability, the most immediate issue raised by the death of George Floyd in the custody of Minneapolis police, as many remember, just a month or so ago. Now, the House of Representatives is expected to convene on Thursday, July 23rd. The Senate would take up the bills the following week. The General Assembly, as I think about it, they have not met since exiting the Capitol back in March, as COVID was taking a hold on all aspects of political, commercial, and social life right here in Connecticut. Now, the police killing of Floyd rapidly has been brought police brutality, racism, and the agenda of Black Lives Matter into the mainstream since then. But housing advocates have been trying to seize the moment, if you will, pushing a reluctant legislature to think more broadly about racism than police bias and misconduct. Back on Tuesday, some housing advocates indicated that they understood their agenda was a long shot for this July or this month or for the next couple of weeks. But it should get a serious hearing soon. Perhaps it will be in September. However, others will think that maybe a long session next year, when it can have a public hearing. To discuss this further, a former colleague of mine in the House of Representatives, in fact, she is also the ranking member, I believe, of zoning. And she is State Representative Tammy Zawistowski. Tammy, good morning.
Good morning, Gary. Thanks for having me on.
It's great to hear your voice again. How have you been?
Good, good. I enjoyed talking to you so much last time. I was just delighted to get the invitation to come back.
Oh, boy. Love it. Thanks. I love being buttered up like that, Tam. You're awesome, as always. But listen, I mean, it's interesting because even we're getting calls on this as well. I guess there's a group called Desegregate Connecticut. I'm sure you've heard of this. Mm-hmm. I think Mayor of Hartford, Luke Bronin's wife, I heard, who happens to be an expert in zoning regulations, maybe the one spearheading this. That's just what a caller had brought up. I have no verification of that. But you've heard of this group. What is this all about?
A lot of members of this group have been active just working with affordable housing over the past 2 years. I'm ranking member of planning development. I've been in the planning and development committee for the past 6 years, 4 years is ranking. And we have a lot of affordable housing issues that we do deal with, and as well as planning and zoning, and they've come in. But they've refocused really only on the discriminatory aspects of affordable housing. They've, you know, pretty much refocused on racism, where it's really a much larger issue. It's really an affordability issue for a wide range of residents. I mean, we really need the people who work at our cities and towns to be able to live there. Healthcare workers, police officers, people who work at local businesses. And I think narrowing the focus to racism, I think you lose some opportunity.
Yeah, I do too, Tammy. In my first term, I was on the housing committee, and in fact, I would have loved to have stayed on there, but I got made ranking member of aging for my second term, so I had to give up being on the housing committee. And we spent a lot of time, as I recall, discussing the 830G, in which there is a 10% threshold mandated statutorily to municipalities to have a affordable housing for 10% of their population. I know that still exists, so therein lies the confusion. Why are we still discussing this when there's already a statute in place for affordable housing?
Well, you know, I think there are towns, there are no penalties for noncompliance at this point, and there are waivers. But the other problem is the definition of affordable housing. Under 830G, it has to be deed restricted.
That's right.
There's a lot of towns that we have, especially in the rural areas, where the housing, their single family housing stock is already, you know, fairly affordable. I mean, some of our towns, you can purchase a nice house for, you know, under like $150,000. So, I mean, that's affordable. Any of the new units that they buy may wind up being even more than that. The other thing that we lose sight of is, you know, people need to be able to afford to live in these houses when they buy them, too. I mean, Connecticut having the highest, you know, very high taxes at high energy costs, it just exacerbates the problem.
That's an excellent point. So maybe we can turn around and point the fingers back at, you know, those who vote to inflict these high taxes on us all.
And this desegregate Connecticut people, they do have some good ideas, and they're not the only ones that are out there pushing for a special session. And as you know, Gary, if we have a special session, any bills have to go through as emergency certifications, which means they can't have really a truly public hearing. And bills are only issued as drafts until the last minute. And right now under COVID, it's very hard to have a healthy debate in the legislature. And this is just bad for the public. A lot of these ideas, whether people agree with them or not, I really think they should be saved for the January session coming up, the long session.
Yeah, I brought that up in the intro to it. And I don't want anybody to have any confusion here. We're not suggesting that we don't have, you know, this debate or this dialogue or listen to all points of view. In fact, we encourage that. In fact, that's the reason why having this or holding this off until next legislative session, when it'll actually be a longer session, where you can have a public hearing.
And some of these ideas are just too large and too important to be rushed through in a special session without healthy debate.
I think a lot of municipalities look at it where they're saying, you know, listen, okay, so we're going to comply with this 10% threshold when it comes to state statute 830-G. But we want to have the say as far as where we want to put this affordable housing. I know in my district, when I was in office with you, they were implementing busways and railways, and they were looking at transit oriented development. And I think you and I have even had several discussions when certain bills were being brought to the floor of the House. And there's a moratorium I think a lot of towns have instituted when it comes to the 830G that buys them some time to hopefully negotiate with the planner or developer, saying, hey, listen, we know we haven't met the 10% affordable housing threshold yet, but we would like to have some say as far as where this gets developed. You can't just randomly, you know, choose any place that you want to, right? Wouldn't you agree with that? Or
no, absolutely. Right now, the proposals that are out there are requiring land within a half a mile of a transit station, or now this is new, within a quarter mile of commercial developments to be multifamily.
Oh.
This may work in some areas, but not necessarily others. How about, I've got a situation where we've got a train station in Windsor Locks. East Windsor is within a half a mile, but it's on the other side of the river. I mean, there's crazy examples like that as well.
Yeah, there are towns, by the way, that don't have bus routes or not only bus routes, but bus stops, or hubs, whatever you want to call them, bus station, or even train stations. So therefore, the transit-oriented development doesn't even come into play. Therefore, how does that municipality comply with the 830G?
Yeah, and... It's just kind of a can of worms that we shouldn't be discussing in a special session, because it just it's not going to give the public the opportunity to speak on it. I think also one of my main concerns as well is if you go onto the Desegregate Connecticut website, one of their long-term goals is for regional planning, possibly through the councils of government. And concerns here go way beyond housing, because if you have a regional planning authority, what happens if you have good infrastructure near your town, whether it's highways, train, or an airport, and all of a sudden they decide, well, I think all the industrial should go there. So it goes way beyond housing when you start talking about issues like this. I mean, so what happens? Do we set up a regional taxing authority at that point?
Oh, geez. No, please, not another bureaucratic governing body. Don't even say that. I hope not.
Yeah, I mean, and we have New Haven Mayor Justin Ellicott talking about a segregation tax now, where if you have a higher tax on open land, or if a town does not have enough affordable housing, that they have to start paying to other towns that do. I mean, that was an editorial I read yesterday.
Is there something where they're looking at state government not allowing? I thought somebody called earlier this week regarding borders from each town, and that the government can kind of come right in and mess with your borders. And when it comes to this, does this sound at all familiar to you?
This was actually through the housing committee, which I'm not on. It did pass the housing committee. I don't have the exact details, but it allows housing authorities in one town the ability to go to adjacent towns within 30 miles, I believe, and develop if they're considered high opportunity areas, which would be areas with transit or there's other aspects as well, but I don't know that bill quite as well as others.
Holy cow.
We really need to discuss this in an open session. I mean, if that's the case, and you know, seriously, some of the ideas that are come across are very good. Training for municipal officials, I think we should probably look at the accessory apartments that they're talking about. There may be some uses, some good ways to be able to accommodate not only an affordability issue, but also with elderly. And they're also talking about, standardizing appropriate procedures and lowering fees. Hey, I'm all for that. There's good too here. I mean, we do need affordable housing. We do need to be able to have people who work in our towns actually afford to live there.
Yeah, but see, there's the confusion. And so Democrats will say, well, the Republicans don't want any affordable housing in their districts or in their towns. But that couldn't be further from the truth. All we're saying is we want some input as far as where specifically in the town it's going to be. You can't just come in arbitrarily and just say, hey, we're going to put it here. Well, it's not either A, it's not zoned for it, or B, we don't want it there,
It may make no sense there.
Well, right, exactly. But the developer is not looking at it like that. In fact, they'll even take you to court. In other words, if the developer can go before your local TPZ, your local town planning and zoning, and say, we want to put this development here, and let's say, they have a public hearing and people come out either in support of or against it, and then a couple of weeks later, they reconvene and they vote it down. That developer can then take that municipality to court, citing the state statute of 830G, and it's almost pointless to even go to court, because from what I recall, I think out of 100 cases, the developer wins like 99 of them, which is why there's not many 830G attorneys out there, because it's almost like a losing battle from the get-go, which is why a lot of these moratoriums, I think, are created.
One of the draft bills that I've seen on this issue is also allows individuals to take towns to court if they feel that spirit of the regs that were not being followed. I mean, that's the best I can paraphrase it.
You know, it sounds like the governor is kind of with you on this. He didn't want to have this kind of rushed through into a special session. It kind of sounds like he wants this to have a public hearing, which is good. I mean, at least it buys you time. Well, of course, that's not to say that there won't be another special session, I'm hearing, in September, possibly. But
yeah, and it shouldn't be just the public hearing. It should go through the whole committee process. It really, rather than just, like right now with the police bill, they're having a listening session today, which is kind of a gesture towards having a public hearing. But if you start next January, you have the committee process. It needs to be vetted at the committee level. Something like this would probably go through both housing and planning development. And you have your hearings, and then it has a debate in committee, and then you have a debate in both chambers. I mean, that's the way it really needs to be done.
Right. I remember being on housing. Larry Butler was the a state representative. Larry Butler out of Waterbury was the chair. Who is the ranking member of housing now?
And for the House, it's Joe Zullo.
I don't know Joe Zullo. Joe Zullo? He's the ranking?
He's the ranking now, yeah, in housing.
In housing, okay.
For the House.
Is he new?
Yeah, fairly new.
And he got a ranking position? Wow, good.
Yeah,
good for him. Holy smokes.
He's a good legislator. And the House chair is Brandon McGee out of Hartford.
Okay. Oh, he's the chair now. He was the deputy chair. Larry Butler's not there anymore. The chair of that anymore, huh?
No.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I like Larry Butler's a good guy.
Yeah, he is. Oh, my goodness. He is a really good guy. Very reasonable. He could have dismissed a lot of the Republican suggestions because they have the majority. And, as far as numbers are concerned, ours didn't really even factor in. But he'd always sit down. And there were times that he was in complete agreement with Republicans and would take it back to his own caucus and would take a beating from them for agreeing with Republicans on some occasions. So,
yeah, on the Senate side, the chair is Saud Anwar, and the ranking is Tony Wong.
Yeah, okay. Tony Wong was with us. Maybe we should get Tony Wong on next month, next week, or something. Tammy, another home run you hit way out of the park. We really appreciate you being with us this morning.
Well, thank you very much, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk about this.